As long as you don't forget where you got it.
Reconvene the House Labor Committee. Once again, we'll start by introduction of LC drafts. LC 790 requires wages earned and unpaid at time of termination of employment to be paid at regular payday when such wages normally would be paid. Declares emergency effective on passage. The request of the Oregon Restaurant and Hospitality Association, the Oregon Restaurant and Beverage Association, and the Multifamily Council of Oregon. LC 2631 increases penalty for violation of prohibition against use of professional strikebreakers. The request of the Associated Western Pulp and Paper Workers. And finally, LC 2302 modifies duty disability retirement of police officers and firefighters under PERS, defines work for which qualified for purposes of that retirement, allows suspension of disability benefits for retiree refusal to accept suitable work for which qualified, allows employment of retiree while continuing to receive reduced disability benefits. Request the Oregon State Firefighters Council. And those are the three we have this morning. And I'll find out whose that is. Can you move those over?
Sure, I'll move the proposed LC drafts to...
Okay. Representative Johnson has moved the three LC drafts for introduction as a committee bill, as committee bills. Is there any objection? So moved. Okay, next order of business, we have in front of us this morning the proposed amendments to House Bill 2036. This bill has been in the committee while we did get language back from Legislative Council. It has been reported out with a due pass subject to this language, and does everybody have the language now in front of them? Mm-hmm.
Dash two.
The dash two amendments. Thank you, Max. Good point. Any, Max, you want to go through this? Any changes?
There are essentially no changes except down in C and D. We took C and made it a former management service employer, former classified unrepresented, is reemployed by the same agency after an absence of more than 1 year. And in D, a former management service employer, former classified unrepresented employee who is employed by a different agency does not have the 1 year time period to come back and have a trial service period.
Right.
The only problem that I see with this right now, and I think we can change it right now, is in D on line 13 it says employee is employed. After some conversations this morning, those employees within 2 years have some reemployment rights, so that should probably say on 13 where it says employed should say re-employed. I've checked with the agency and that would cover the workers who are out and have reemployment rights.
So it'd be re-employed on line 13?
That's correct.
Okay. And that's the sponsor of the legislation agreed to that, and
yes,
it follows the intent of the committee.
Yes.
Okay, any discussion?
Move the amendments.
Representative Johnson moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2036. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved. And I suppose we should, since the bill is in the possession, the committee again move the bill to the floor as amended.
I'll move the bill as amended.
Representative Johnson moves the bill, House Bill 2036, as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any more discussion? Laverne, would you call the roll once again on this?
Representative Whitty?
No.
Representative Fairfoot.
Yes.
Representative Donner.
No.
Representative Edmondson.
I think, yeah, you're right.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Maddox.
Yes.
Representative Walden.
Aye.
Chairman Shifrak.
Aye. House Bill 2036 is amended, as amended, is moved to the floor with a due pass. I believe Representative Durfler, didn't I assign you to carry that in the first place? Okay. So moved. Okay, we will now go to a public hearing on 2320. We do have a sign-up sheet. For the benefit of the committee, as I mentioned at the last public hearing on this bill, we're going to have an informal working group tomorrow with the those folks that are interested in discussing possible changes on this at 3 o'clock. And I don't have the room number right with me. Oh, it's in the office
453
up there with the committees. We'll have some state agency people there and see what changes. I think a lot of it needs to be clarified, and I intend at that time to talk to some of the interest groups interested in this to show them exactly what the bill does and doesn't do.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
As a courtesy to you and the committee members, I had done a memo to legislative council today asking for certain amendments to try to clarify that language, and I just wanted you to have that available as early as possible.
Appreciate that. Okay. 2320, Mr. Van Natta.
I am Fred Van Natta, appearing before you on behalf of the Oregon State Home Builders Association and the Associated Oregon Loggers, both of whom are associations generally in the contracting business. I would say first, this is a subject matter that has plagued this legislative halls for as long as I have been here, and that is a long period of time. Who an independent contractor is and who an independent contractor isn't is not very clear under existing Oregon statutes. The Home Builders Association, with the cooperation of some of the members of this committee in previous sessions, provided for the creation of a special registration system with the Department of Employment, which they have which they call Form 1625, which assists the residential construction business with people registered with the Builders Board to figure out who an independent contractor is and who one isn't. But we believe this is a substantial improvement. I'm sure that the testimony that you heard last week made clear that there are different definitions with different agencies, and as one who works in the field with the small business people who face that, they don't understand it, and it doesn't make any sense to them at all. And my principal point here is that you are this is a very important piece of legislation to literally thousands of small businesses in the state that are in the contracting field, and I hope that we can work together on down the road until you get something that makes everybody as happy as possible and can pass it, because this would be a significant contribution to the Oregon statutes. And if you talk to people from other states across the country, they have the same problem. I was interested to appear on a panel with the chief auditor for the State Accident Insurance Fund as we were out trying to explain to people in the construction business what they had to do and what they should do and what they shouldn't do in terms of trying to deal with subcontractors and employees. And the auditor, and he said, I have worked in 13 states, and Oregon today has the best law of any of the states I've been in on who an independent contractor is and who isn't. And all I got to say is they got a hell of a lot of trouble in other states.
That's interesting.
I've seen businesses get get a back audit from the State Accident Insurance Fund for as much as $144,000 for people that they thought were independent contractors, that the auditors came by and said they do not meet the test of an independent contractor. Those are employees, and many of you are familiar with or have been talked to by the people in the carpet industry in the last 2 years, where some carpet shops couldn't meet the, didn't have enough money, were put out of business literally and they were honest, sincere people that were doing that, trying to do everything they could to follow the law, and they got And when it got to the bottom line, why they were crossways of it, and got assessments. All of this, clarifying this legislation, will address that problem, and we hope eliminate it. So, general testimony. In terms of specifics, because I did not know exactly what the course of this, the hearings on this was going to be, I delivered to the committee at your last hearing a memo with three suggested amendments on it, and I will certainly be participating in the work session tomorrow. Rather than belabor specifics, I will wait until we come back from the work session, and I can go into specifics then and save the committee some time. I'd be happy to answer any questions,
Mr. Chairman,
anybody might have.
Sure. Representative Woody.
Fred, I want to vote for this bill, but I want to be able to understand what I'm doing when I vote for it. And right now, I can't understand a portion of the bill. Do you have the bill?
Yes.
On page 1, section 1A. Where it says that four or more of the circumstances described in this paragraph, if four or more exist, then the person is an independent contractor. And then it gives A through F, right?
That is
correct. A through F.
A through F,
yeah.
Right?
That is correct.
All right. None of those are required. Is that true? In other words, you don't have to have A if you have C, D, E, and F.
That is my understanding of the way it is drafted, Representative Whitty.
Right. So then F is not required of any contractor, is it?
That is my understanding of the way it's drafted.
Yes, F is not required of anyone. You may use it, but it is not required.
That is my understanding.
All right, then let's turn over to page 7. And look at section 6.2. Section 6.2, where it says, in determining whether an individual who performs services as a follower or bucker in the logging industry meets the requirements of subsection 1, which is what we just looked at on the first page of this section, such an individual need not comply with subparagraph F. Paragraph of paragraph A of subsection 1 of section 1 of this 1989 Act, which is F on the first page. It says that followers or buckers need not comply with F, and you just told me nobody had to comply with F. Then why do we have that in there?
Representative Whitty, if I was as smart as the people at Legislative Council, I might be working down there for their salaries. I have no explanation. Perhaps the person who drafted the legislation would be able to address that.
We're going to have Chuck Wilson with us. Again, Representative Whitty, it's curious that one exemption, it is a current exemption under the Employment Division laws, and why it was specifically mentioned, I'm a little unclear myself.
Well, I am unclear, Mr. Chairman, since nobody has to comply with that.
That's true.
Nobody has to. Why that's there?
We will get an answer.
Okay. I thought maybe you knew. You would know.
I'm honored.
Well, you're just
flattered by your
I hate to say it, Fred, but you're just like me. I don't know why it's there either.
I would. You can read it two different ways. One, you don't have to use F, which I don't think was the intent. Or secondly, that it is implied that you can already a faller and bucker in the logging industry can use F as one of the four, but it is unclear, I agree, and it has been duly noted. Any other questions of Mr. Van Natta?
I guess I have one before
Representative
I leave.
Dominey.
In the timber industry, is there any other contractor issues that you can see that this bill does not address? Because I wasn't a part of the summer's activities when the thing was put together. Did the timber industry at all have any other concerns with contractor language that was put together in here?
Representative Dominey, I do not believe so, and I have taken the language of this bill and we put it in a newsletter that is presently being circulated widely among contractors in the timber industry. I think there is some concern. Or I know there's some concern with the requirement for four out of the six. Some of the obviously a contractor in the timber industry doesn't have a separate office. The fallers and the subcontractors in the timber industry don't have separate offices outside of their home. And they could have some difficulty with meeting four out of the six. I know there's some concern in that arena. Beyond that, I don't know of any concern, and I'm circulating the language as widely as possible to see if somebody finds some that I don't know about.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Van Natta. Mark Wheeler. Good morning.
Good morning, Representative Shiprack. Committee. My name is Mark Wheeler. I'm from American Messenger Service. And in our industry, which is a new and emerging kind of thing in the last 15 years, there's a lot of use of independent contractors in our business, and there's a lot of questions whether or not they really qualify as such. And I really got to thank the committee for taking on this kind of legislation, because it's going to clear it up once and for all. And I really think that the way it's written right now will do our industry justice, bring a new level of quality to it, because it'll either add control or make things more uniform so that the public, the people that use us, are going to have a better consistency of service. And I think this is outstanding for that purpose. I would like to mention a couple of things. I was in the I testified at the interim committee session before this legislature opened. And there's a lot of discussion in Section 1A on page 1 with respect to how many of the A through F an independent contractor should need to qualify for. That currently stands at 4, and I would encourage you to leave it there, as I think that's quite sufficient for someone who is truly an independent contractor to meet those requirements. In fact, in most cases, they're going to meet all 6 of them in an awful lot of cases. So having to only meet 4 is quite sufficient in my mind. And I think that you'll find for most businesses that's going to be true. I do have a concern when we're trying to create legislation that uniformly makes it so that all the different government agencies that have to work with this are working with the same set of rules. That's the good part. My experience has been oftentimes once the rules have been made law, now each agency develops their set of rules to make it work for them. And we could end up with, after each agency comes up with their interpretation of this and their set of guidelines on how to actually make this work, that again we have completely separate sets of rules again. I would encourage you to consider some type of provision that would allow for each government agency to appoint a person to get together with the other people and draft a common set of rules for administering this law once it's enacted. Otherwise, we could be back where we started from. Secondly, good laws, especially one that this looks like it could be, are only as good as the enforcement to make it actually happen. People that are currently not complying that will need to comply are going to be very resistant to do that and looking for ways to get out of it. People that are currently complying and finding they don't have to may misread it and get out of compliance inadvertently because they misinterpreted it. I think it'd be very important that some type of responsibility be given to some agency or group of agencies to make sure things do get enforced. One of my regulating agencies, which is the Oregon PUC, has an awful lot to deal with. And I find that sometimes certain things fall through the cracks, even though something's a law. People know that, hey, it's not going to be enforced, we can just continue to get away with it. And it's real important that if we're going to have a law, that there be some way, some method to ensure that people are actually going to follow it, be it audits that you have to report in at the end of the year. I get various forms that I have to report at the end of the year just to show what I did. That's not an awful lot of work on my part, doesn't require an awful lot of work on the agency's part that's receiving that report. They just plug it into their computer, and if I did my job, then everything's okay. Otherwise, they send someone out to find out, you know, why is this number so out of line? So I would suggest that something like that be done to help ensure that this is properly policed and that people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Thank you very much.
On your, I happen to agree with both of your points, Mark, and it's something during the interim we were very aware of. I've talked to the agencies about administrative rules. I'm not even sure we need any if the statute is clear what administrative rules you'd need. We don't have to have rules for everything.
Right.
The second thing is something that I was going to share with the committee. Not only is this legislation proposed this session, but the various state agencies, for the interest of the committee and the public also, are looking at sometime down the line a single form for reporting of employer taxes. One piece of paper that an employer would get and do the various deductions, et cetera, for their employees. That currently, of course, does not occur. Secondly, and this is perhaps not as far-fetched as it may sound 3 years ago it did, but the possibility of if we do have a clear law that only one government auditor would be necessary to go into a business annually or however often they do it and do an audit of the employment taxes, withholding, workers' comp, etc. And that would certainly save a lot of time and effort. And so this is all kind of tied together here, and certainly we'll be encouraging the agencies to move in that direction if possible. And certainly the first part of that is uniform descriptions to start with. Otherwise, it's fairly impossible. But thought I'd mention, I don't think I mentioned that earlier when we had the first hearing, but that's kind of the direction we're trying to head.
Mr. Chairman?
Simplicity, Paperwork Reduction Act of 88 and 89. Representative Mannix.
I won't make any comment about reducing paperwork. I just wanted to mention, Mr. Chairman, that I did have about 20 sets made of those amendments. When you mention a work session tomorrow, there may be some people...
I want to make clear that it's not a work session at all.
An informal gathering?
Yeah, we have to be clear about that.
Anyone who's interested in those, the rewording that I'm playing with that I've asked Legislative Council to work on, there's about 20 sets of that rewording over there now, and you're free to grab a copy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The only work session clarification is that this committee, of course, will have final say on anything that goes out of here. We'll vote on any amendments. Representative Witte.
Just a comment on your need for rules. What seemed to me, since this is case law that we're codifying in one bill,
exactly,
that the rules, the time for the rules is long past. I mean, any agency that was going to deal with those various cases should have drafted rules a long time ago.
Sure.
Now we're putting them all together in one piece of legislation, and now I suppose that's when the rules will come.
Actually, we'll be cutting out a lot of administrative rules. There were, again, for the committee's benefit, the various agencies have a varying amount of tests already. I think employment's got 20-some different tests that they look at versus the six that you have here and then mandatory. So they were all over the board on this thing. Any other questions of Mr. Wheeler? Thanks
Thank
an
you.
Awful lot, Mark. Linda Gardner. Welcome to the Labor Committee.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Linda Gardner, and I'm a deputy city attorney for the city of Portland. A few of the attorneys in our office took a look at this bill last week, and we looked at it specifically from the perspective of how would we look at the contracts that come into us for approval prior to the commencement of performance and assure that an individual met the criteria of being an independent contractor so that we could approve entering into the contract with that person even if they did not furnish us with evidence of workers' compensation coverage. First of all, I'd like to digress and say that I too appreciate the efforts that the Joint Committee has gone to arrive at a consistent definition of independent contractor, because it is a very unclear and confusing area of the law, and we all appreciate these attempts at coming to a clearer and more consistent definition of these relationships. We do think, however, that there are some problems with the definitions that could be and should be ironed out if it's to provide the clarity that is intended by everyone here. I wasn't here on Wednesday, and so I don't know who testified about the definitions. I'll try to go through the definitional problems as quickly as possible. But the problems that we ran into when we attempted to apply it to our relationships was, first of all, that the first of the 4 out of 6 criteria in subsection 1A, the first three are perhaps not met by a lot of the independent contractors that the city of Portland uses, and certainly the first one is very unlikely to be met.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Woody.
Excuse me, but we have a proposed amendment from Representative Mannix that changes the first one, A, where it says, you're talking about the home, the business in the home.
Yes, right.
Well, it says, it changes it in this manner, where it says a part of the home that is set aside can be used as a business rather than something completely separate, a part of the residence.
I think that that's a desirable change. I'm sorry I didn't get that far in the amendments.
It says the labor or services are primarily carried out at a location that is separate from the residence of an individual who performs the labor or service, or are primarily carried out in a specific portion of the residence, which portion is set aside as a location of the business.
It's my belief that most of the independent contractors that we use would fulfill that requirement. I think.
Linda, before
yes.
you go on, I'm confused about something. Who are these people that you're? We're not talking about building contractors.
No, we certainly are not.
Who is this group we're talking about?
They vary quite a bit because, as you know, we have a lot of employees, and most of the time they're employees of the city, and then we have our building contracts and contracts with larger people who are basically employers themselves. But we frequently have contracts primarily with consultants who will do studies of either government operations or special needs of the community. Oftentimes they work by themselves without any assistance from other people. Oftentimes they do work out of their homes, and quite frequently they're new businesses that are getting set up. And when they grow to a certain size, then they'll get an office, and then they'll have employees and carry workers' compensation themselves, workers' compensation insurance
so,
themselves.
Okay, it's the people that typically you would contract with to study your sanitation problems or
exactly.
transportation needs or something like that.
Exactly.
White collar types, basically.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
I didn't know who we were. Okay, I think I understand that.
I should have said that at the beginning.
No.
To put it into
okay.
context. The last three criteria in subsection A also give us some problem just in figuring out how we could rely on them. The federal and state income tax returns are supposed to be tax returns for each year. The tax returns showing that it's a separate business for each year, but it doesn't say each year of when. So if these people came into us and we said, show us your income tax returns, we wouldn't know which years to ask them for. We wouldn't, it seems logically that in retrospect, what would be looked at would be the year in which the services are performed, but there wouldn't be any income tax returns for that year yet. So that, practically speaking, it's difficult to see how to apply that criteria to rely on it. Subsection E has a similar problem in that it's written that labor or services are performed only pursuant to written contracts. We can be sure that the labor or services of the independent contractor is performed only pursuant to a written contract with the city. We cannot be sure that it's performed, that this person performs all of his or her labor or services only pursuant to written contracts.
Well, I don't know if that's a concern of yours, though.
Well, it's a concern in the sense that we're the people who bear the
exactly.
penalties if we're the non-complying employer. So even though it's the independent contractor who has to meet the criteria, we're the people who have to be sure that they meet the criteria before we can rely upon it.
Okay.
Okay. And the last criteria is easy enough to apply. In the mandatory criteria which follow, we don't have any problems except with subsection E, the authority to hire and fire employees to perform the labor or services. And we have that problem because we currently require that when an individual makes a contract with us, say, for example, these consultant contracts, that they do one of two things.